I just start, if I can, from reading James chapter 1, from verses 25 to the 26 and 27. But whoever looks into the perfect law of liberty and continues in it, he is not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work. This one shall be blessed in his doing. If anyone thinks to be religious amongst you, yet does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is vain. Pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their afflictions and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. So Jenny works in a difficult area, and she's going to explain to you what Inner Hope does. But I just want you to know, when Jared saw you, he says, there is Gage's mom, there is Darius's mom. And so for us, as we know Jenny, she's the mother of many children. And so,
Thank you so much. That was one of the most special introductions I've had yet. Actually, what was really funny is I was at a birthday party for a little one recently, and the little ones were all running up to me, and one of the girls said, wow, you're like the grandma from the hood. So the kids that I helped raise are having kids, so I actually am starting to feel like a grandma. It's weird. Anyways, okay. So the story of Inner Hope actually connects with both Ruth Morton and 19th Avenue. So I think some of you are going to be really a little bit surprised by this journey. And I thought I would just, share the story and hopefully encourage you all and your congregation from the parts that you've had to play. I'll just open in prayer. God, I just ask that you give me the words and to share with the congregation today. God, I just thank you for your love and the way you're at work here in our city among so many different demographics of people. God, I just pray that together we can minister in the hard places and shine your light in this city. Amen. I'm hoping today that by sharing this story, you'll catch on to three kind of themes. One is that God uses circumstances, scripture, and people to unveil his plan and direct us on our path. The other is that God uses very unlikely people. At the beginning of this journey, I was not somebody with experience or training or someone that you would expect to be in the inner city. God provides, faith and provision when we trust in him. And so Inner Hope's journey actually goes back to 1993 at Camp Kwanos. I know Camp Kwanos is a Fellowship Baptist church, so there's likely been a number of people from Ruth Morton over the years who have attended Kwanos, have had kids attend Kwanos. But as a child and a teenager, that was the summer camp I went to every summer. And when I was 17 and a leader in training, the first week of the summer, there was a group of inner city kids sent over. It was a junior high camp. And the two girls that New Beginnings Church sent were placed in my cabin. One of the girls didn't talk basically the whole week, was really withdrawn, and you could sense there was a lot of trauma in her life. And the other girl opened up about some abuse that she had gone through. I was really, really touched by these girls and their stories. And the next week, New Beginnings Church sent 29 to 11-year-olds to Juniors 1. And immediately, when I heard there were more kids coming from the inner city, I wanted to know these kids. And so the second week, I was in the dish pit doing dishes, but all my spare time was with these 20 kids. And one 9-year-old boy opened up to me that his stepdad was in jail for molesting him, his mom was in a drug and alcohol treatment center, and he was staying with a grandmother in social housing on Main Street, actually Little Mountain. The complex that was torn down, but used to be just on Main and 33rd over there. And so these kids, again, just really touched my heart. And I accompanied them back on the ferry from Vancouver Island. And I wanted to meet the people that were sending these kids over to camp. And so some of you know Pastor Joe Russell, who planted New Beginnings Church. This was about the third year of that church plant. And he and another arrived at the ferry terminal to get these kids. And so I asked him, I said, what do you have for these kids all year? I thought they get this 1 week of camp, they're looked after, they're fed, they're loved, but what is their year round? And he said, we have a little Sunday school program, but we don't really have much, especially for the older ones. But he said, if you ever move to Vancouver, let me know and you can work with the kids. You know, you can come and volunteer with us. And so the fall of my grade 12 year, I called him up and I just said, what would I need to do to intern with you next summer? And he said, well, I could find you a place to stay. And you just, you know, if you can raise some support, you can just come and stay in the city and we'll connect you back up with those kids. So the day after my last grade 12 exam, I moved into the city, and I lived just across from Kingsgate Mall by Broadway and Main there. At the time, New Beginnings was a storefront on Main Street, and I began journeying with these youth, starting a junior high group, day trips, and just spending time in their homes and getting to know their families. There were a couple of verses that really spoke to me. I think a lot of people would say, well, why would an 18-year-old who had grown up in the suburbs, I lived in Ladner during elementary school and Abbotsford during high school, I lived a very sheltered life, and why would someone just move into the inner city at that young of an age and get called? But for me, my, you know, faith was something that I had been taught needed to be lived out. And up until that point, I wasn't exposed to these kinds of social problems. But the scripture verses that I read, for instance, you know, the Jesus telling the parable of the sheep and the goats, and that we are going to be held accountable to how we respond to needs, as you see in this verse. When the nations are gathered before him, he will separate them as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will place the sheep at his right hand and the goats at his left. And the king will say to those on the right, come you who are blessed by my father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry and you fed me. I was thirsty and you gave me a drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in to your home. I was naked and you gave me clothing. I was sick and you cared for me. I was in prison and you visited me. And another passage that really spoke to me was in Luke, and he's talking about a host at a dinner, and he turned to the host and he said, when you put on a lunch or a dinner, he said, don't invite your friends, brothers, relatives, or rich neighbors, for they will repay you by inviting you back. Instead, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, and then at the resurrection of the godly, God will reward you for inviting those who could not repay you. And so As a teenager, being taught these passages in Sunday school and reading them in my devotional time, I just didn't feel like I could know that there were kids in these situations and choose to do nothing. So it started me on a journey. In summer of 1994, which is 21 years ago now, New Beginnings Church took a risk and took on an 18-year-old intern. There were passages that also encouraged me during that time. One was in 1 Timothy. Don't let anyone think less of you because you are young, but be an example to all believers in what you teach and the way you live and your life, your love, your faith, and your purity. And for those of you who are young, like, young people are called. There is... you have the opportunity to serve in ways that you may not even be able to imagine if you will put yourself at God's feet and offer up the abilities and the skills that you have and just have a willing heart to serve. In the fall of 1996, I had begun attending Trinity Western University for my undergrad, and I used to commute in every weekend to keep running. We moved youth group to Friday night. I was involved in a Sunday school program for the youth at New Beginnings, and the needs were so great. So I was inspired to, well, I spent my second year actually on exchange at Eastern College in Pennsylvania. And that church, or sorry, that Christian college took service to the vulnerable to a whole new level that I'd never seen before. And I thought, why can't Trinity have a greater connection in to serving needs? So in the fall of 96, I approached Student Life, and they said, well, you can, there's a day where students can sign up for outreach ministries, and you could just put a table up, a booth, and if anyone wants to join your outreach, you know, that would, you know, that can be the team for this year. So the first year, there were 10 students, actually, that joined up to go in and be youth leaders at New Beginnings Church's Friday night youth group. And so a few months later, Carla, who was a freshman at Trinity Western, joined the Youth Extreme team and began going in on Friday nights and helping run the youth group. And that team really grew. And by the second year, we had 30 Trinity Western students committing to going into the city every Friday night. And then it grew to a Sunday team for Sunday school. And Youth Extreme still is active on Trinity Western's campus. And they're still running the Friday night youth group at New Beginnings Church. It was during this time that I actually met Rika and I met Stella through their time volunteering at New Beginnings Church as well. So as we got deeper involved in the lives of the kids took me on a journey. The more they opened up, the more the needs seemed to grow. A lot of the youth at the time were struggling with being involved in criminal activity, and there were court hearings and navigating the court system and doing jail visits. There were kids in and out of foster care. The group homes was the big thing back then, having teens in group homes with shift workers, day shift, evening shift, night shift. And there were huge gaps in the school system. And at the time, First Nations young people, which by the third year, most of the youth in our youth programs had some Indigenous background, and the grad rates were under 10% for First Nations youth at the time. And so I had more kids going to jail than graduating from high school. And it was a time of just, okay, how do we begin to address this? At the same time, we had opportunities arose for youth and children to begin staying with us. And so this picture actually was at our new home. So that wasn't the home where we started looking after young people. But for various reasons, we ended up with youth and children on our doorstep. And we realized that when they lived with us, immediately there was just an increased level of stability and an ability to function and build skills and go back to school. But there were a variety of circumstances youth ended up on our doorstep. The first was a mom who needed to go to a drug and alcohol treatment center and wanted her kids to stay with people they knew. The second was a 13-year-old girl who ran away to our house, and the social workers said, you know, we don't really have foster homes for teens. We just have group homes. Unless you would be able to let her stay with you, that would probably be a better option for her. Next, there was a family evicted, and the mom went to stay with friends in, you know, a rooming house in the downtown east side, leaving her son to just couch surf and fend for himself. Then there was a girl who was in jail, and the judge said that she couldn't be released unless she had more stable housing to go to. And so I got home. I was in my teaching practicum that year. I went back to get my teaching degree and came home to a voice message. Hi, Jenny. I got released, but only into the care of you or Carla. So if you could come and get me. And to this day, I've never heard of a minor, a 16-year-old, being released to adults who had not been in the courtroom, who had not talked to a probation officer or a lawyer. But I literally went down to the prison and asked to see the paperwork, and sure enough, there were her court papers saying to be released into the care of Jenny Shawson or Carla Dickinson, to reside at 515 East 12th Avenue with a curfew at 10 o'clock on weekdays and midnight on weekends. And it was actually that day forward illegal for her to stay anywhere else. So it was more complicated to figure out how to go back to court and redo this agreement than to just let her stay. It was obvious she needed and wanted a stable place. One youth was trying to stay sober and needed a drug and alcohol-free place to stay. One youth was leaving a home with domestic violence. One young person had a falling out with her roommate and was suddenly forced to leave her home with her 1.5-year-old. One youth was evicted from her basement suite and had no place to go. One youth lived in a home with drug and alcohol addiction and wanted to reside in a substance-free place with support and stability. There was a youth whose father asked if his teen could stay, if his daughter could stay with us while he served time in prison and couldn't be available to care for her. So those were a number of the situations that led to us beginning to take in young people into our homes. So in comes 19th Avenue. Actually, it's Camp Quanos comes back into the picture too. I was at Missions Fest one year. A couple of our young people, Mark and Billy, were at Camp Quanos doing a Bible school program that they had just started called Kaleo. And the director of Camp Quanos, Scott Bailey, said to me, "Jenny, what are you doing to get a bigger home and help these kids, you know, more of these kids?" And I, at that point, I was teaching in the Surrey School District full time. I had youth living with me, and I'm supposed to figure out how to start a nonprofit on the side. And so I think I was in my late 20s by then. And he said, "Well, here, you know, I know a lady you should talk to. The Fellowship Baptist has women's safe houses that were started by Lori Waslow and a team of women in the fellowship." And he said, "Her booth's right in the next row behind us. Let's talk to her. She'll know how to get the documents together." And so the conversation got started, and within a month, a group of us met in our living room to talk about, should we go under another ministry, under a church, or on our own? But because housing and youth housing was so unique, we felt like we needed to be independent of, especially when it came to networking with the ministry and with setting up policy and procedures and home. So there were a lot of 19th Avenue people involved in the discernment process. And Carrie Peters actually agreed to join our initial board. We needed 3 people to incorporate, and she was one of those first 3 people that was willing to put her name to this dream. And I'll be forever thankful for her role in that. Colleen Fuller turned up to witness us signing the documents. We met in Carrie and John's backyard under their tree and signed off, and Colleen's name is beside everybody's signature. Securing the home was a journey in itself. I mean, how many landlords want to rent to youth housing, right? So who is going to live here? Well, Carla and I and some youth that need a place to stay. Well, where do these youth come from? Why do they need to stay with you? You know, how do you explain this and not make it sound like a risk liability? And also in East on the east side of Vancouver, most houses are suited. So most houses are broken into, like, every floor is a suite in terms of the rental stock. So to find a home that's 2-story with a lot of bedrooms that hasn't been divided up and rented separately was challenging. So we were looking, and we found this home just 2.5 blocks away from here on 29th and Fraser that was 7 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms, it was connected, and the landlord was looking to rent it to one person to oversee the entire home. obviously seemed a little nervous. She showed it one Saturday and then was going to choose from who came through the home. And we got to the car and Carla said, "Jenny, this is the home." And it was double the price. We had both committed to reduce our jobs to half time to have time to get this going. And so we were looking at our income cutting in half and doubling our bills. And I was overwhelmed. And Carla's like, "Okay, we just need to start calling people in the church to pray." So we called one person and got an answering machine. And the second person I called was Cindy Louie. And Cindy, as most of you know, is quite the prayer warrior. So I expected, I expected her to pray with me right over the phone. But her reaction took me completely off guard. She said, "Jenny, what nationality is the landlord?" And I said, "Well, her name's Mei Chow. I think she's Chinese." "Oh, that's a Cantonese name." She said, "I better come down and meet her." She said, "I can try to make a connection." She loaded her boys, Matthew and Christian, in the car and drove down there. The open house only had an hour left at that point. And she flew down there and made a connection with this landlord. And we still didn't hear for a few days, and I was nervous that maybe we weren't selected after all. But she eventually called, and maybe her first choice bailed or something. But it was just there were some logistics that we needed to figure out, but a verse that came to me at that time was. Was found in Hosea 3. I will transform her. It's the Lord speaking to Israel when they were unfaithful. And he says, "I will transform her. I will return her vineyards to her and transform the valley of trouble into a gateway of hope." And in some Bible versions, it actually says a door of hope. And I thought that's our dream and our vision for this home, that it would be a door of hope and a place of hope for these young people. So with the move, then the team really came out in droves. And here's some people at 19th Ave who were part of that move. Colleen and Tess Fuller and Pat Yee helped clean and pack at the old place. And then Tanya Scott, Trevor, and Josh were there cleaning. Karen Diaz, Danielle Smith. Mike was doing fix-it projects. I don't know if I missed anyone, there was just a whole crew that came and made it happen. And it was just an amazing blessing to get into the home and have the support to set it up for our young people. And neat to see families that came and took it on together. The finances, initially 19th Avenue provided receipting for us before we got our charity status. We were approved as a nonprofit society for British Columbia, but there's a whole other procedure to get that charity status, and that took about another year. And we were very thankful for the church to be behind us during that time. So Tanya was bookkeeper at that point, and I know it created a lot of extra work for her as the checks and donations started coming in. And then Karen Prinsloo also helped with some bookkeeping as we were transferring onto our own QuickBooks system. We had volunteers. Colleen Fuller and Tanya Jackson became two of our first mentors when we started matching youth one-on-one with adult mentors and took the opportunity and to do that. And then with the facility, 19th Avenue actually opened up the basement to allow us to do workshops, volunteer training workshops, life skills workshops at the facility. And not only that, but John and Carrie Peters housed about three of our summer interns, different summers when we'd get a government grant to hire a college student, and they sometimes weren't from the area and needed a temporary place for 3 months to stay while they interned with us. So this is the new home. This is the home that we got in the summer of 2007. And it was just an incredible blessing. And kids just started coming in droves. And many of you got to know some of the young people who were staying with us during those early years. keep an extra, Tony in the back with the red hair, I'm going to show an updated picture in a little bit, so just take note of that. And Mark, who's crouched there, you'll see an updated picture of him as well. So at this point, I'd like to just call up Carrie and Colleen to come and just share a little bit about their piece in the Inner Hope story. Wow.
That's great.
So I just thought I'd let them each share from their own, in their own words, just what their individual involvement was, and then how it impacted their life. So maybe we'll start with, who'd like to start us off?
Okay. Both of those at the same time?
Sure.
Okay. Yeah. Jenny's already told you a little bit about my involvement. I actually first got to know Jenny in a house group at 19th Avenue. We were in the same group, and when you went away to Driftpile, we tried to keep in contact a little bit. And then she came back, and as you heard, she invited me to this meeting to discuss forming a nonprofit. And you have to realize, I have no experience in being involved in board of directors, forming nonprofits, knowing anything about charity status, writing constitutions. She just invited me, and I came to find out what was going on, and it's like, oh, wow, lots going on. I don't think I really know anything about this. And then the next thing I know, she asked me to be on the founding board of directors. And I thought, oh. And I really thought, I don't know how to do that. I don't even know what it involves. So I did talk to Janet Anderson, who was also asked to be on the board and had a lot of experience, and so she gave me a little bit of advice, and I decided that, well, you know, this was a unique place to try and serve, and if they wanted me, even though I didn't really know what I was doing, that I would be willing to be on the board. And so I joined, and Janet was on the board that year as well, and I learned a lot from her. And then the next year, they asked me to be the chair, which actually was kind of a vote of confidence, I guess, but I don't know that it was particularly based in any skill I had demonstrated. But I agreed to, and you know, and then I was on the board for 5 years as chair, and it was a really exciting time. I mean, it was from the beginning of this organization, and we saw growth in the number of people that were as employees of the organization. We saw growth in the number of programs offered. We saw growth in the number of youth that were reached. We saw actually gaining new properties and getting a new house, and that was very exciting. So, you know, the impact it had on my life, I was thinking it was several fold, and one of the first is actually seeing how when you step out in faith, God can really bless that. So, because one of the things we had to do as a board was, of course, the annual budget. And I'm not afraid of numbers. I like playing with Excel spreadsheets. So that part of it wasn't very daunting. But in my personal life, I like to plan my budget based on the income I already have or that I pretty much know I'm going to have. And plan carefully and you know, maybe I don't step out in faith in my own life. And yet, with Inner Hope, we had to plan and really pray that God would direct our planning, first of all, and then trust that he would provide for the programs that he wanted us to carry out. And that was a bit faith-stretching for me, I think. I mean, there's always this balance between the prudence of where Jesus talked about, you know, a builder who should sit down and calculate the cost of the tower before he starts building it. And yet, so on the one hand, and I'm quite comfortable with that part of it, but on the other hand, really praying and saying, okay, God, I believe you want us to do this, and therefore I believe you'll provide for it, and the money really isn't there yet. So this was a kind of a stretching of my faith. The other impacts it had on my life, I think, is it put faces and names and people to some of the poverty that we hear about in the newspaper and on TV. because although I wasn't a frontline worker meeting with these kids and I wasn't a mentor, I did get to know some of them and I got to know the stories, and it really put people to those statistics. And I think the third thing that it did was really it made me more aware of the Aboriginal community in Vancouver, because as Jenny mentioned, a vast majority of the kids have some Aboriginal heritage in their background, and it made me more aware of the plight that some of them face here and within Canada. And I think when I hear stories on the news now, I can think of families or I can think of people that I might know.
So Colleen, your involvement and how that's impacted you.
Okay. Well, my involvement has been since the beginning, really. I feel like it sort of started with watching what Jenny and Carla were doing and getting excited about it and realizing that God was doing something kind of exciting and that the idea of these kids choosing stability and wholeness over the chaos they'd been raised in, them making decisions for themselves that they were ready for something different, was amazingly encouraging and powerful experience to just know that someone who's 14 years old is looking at their life and seeing what happened to their parents and thinking, I don't want that route. Despite not having resources built into them by parenting and not having all the privileges that our kids have, they were being called to something better. And that was something that I just could not help but want to be part of. I was so moved by that. And that Jenny and Carla were willing to give their lives to support this. It was very powerful. So whenever there was an opportunity, I was there. I just wanted to be part of it. And so, you know, whether it was cleaning the house or cleaning up other things or being part of this new mentoring program, I was all over it. And the mentoring program came along just at about the time, or just about a year before I started going back to school for counseling. And boy, if anything will motivate you to want to learn more, getting to know what these folks are up against was really powerful. So I started mentoring a young woman, and that's still a work in progress. I've learned so much from her and so much from the experience of walking with her through the challenges that she is experiencing. I just would really ask all of you to pray for her. I'm not going to tell you much about her story, but just that she has had a couple of people who are closest to her die very recently, and she is lost. Mm-hmm. And she would say so herself. Mm-hmm. And she needs the Lord desperately. Mm-hmm. She needs His reclaiming power, anyway, so that's since 2006, I believe, or 2007?
2010 was
2010?
When we started the Boundless Program.
2010.
February 2010.
Okay, I thought it had been longer. Anyway, 2010, we've been walking together, and I've learned so much. When I came into this, I was I was raised by a pastor's family. I thought I knew a lot about people's problems, but I knew nothing. One of the most useful things Inner Hope handed off to me was a dictionary, an urban dictionary, inner city terminology. So I had some idea what they were talking about. Because it is like a different world. I'm not even going to get into it. But the thing I learned quickly from these young people that I was meeting, and I was so impressed by the changes I was seeing. Excuse me. And I realized that God is powerful and that you know, watching the miracles unfold over and over again of, no, it's ridiculous. No landlord in the city of Vancouver is going to rent to a group of random folks from the downtown east side. That's not happening. Yes, it is. You know, and there's like all of these things that just happened over and over again. Like this experience, you know, I'm struggling. There's a verse that's in the back of my head about making sure that your faith is not in vain, making sure that your faith is not selfish. But my faith grew deeper as it became about serving others in more ways. And now, as a counselor, I have the wonderful opportunity to work with some of the youth on dealing with the traumas that they've experienced and work with the amazing staff members and to encourage them and to help with figuring out how on earth you draw a boundary. How do you say, yeah, this is my day off. I know that you're having a huge life crisis. I've got to have a day off. Because if I don't, I will soon lose my effectiveness and my ability to help you. How do you draw a boundary that says, no, you know, even though this is the same kind of infraction you keep committing, this time we're going to say no. You know, it's that challenge of growing the wisdom of how to sacrificially serve in a way that's sustainable on the long run. And it's working with these extraordinarily committed, crazy committed staff and being impressed by how much of their life they're willing to give.
Yeah. Thank you. My last question is just, admit you've kind of given a couple examples of it, but how have you seen God at work through Inner Hope in East Vancouver?
In a number of ways. And the first I mentioned too is the way that God has provided for the programs and provided to keep Inner Hope going, and that really is a miracle. I think the other was the provision of the home. The first home they got in 2007, as Jenny described, was a miracle, and it was actually only a block from our house. So I was particularly excited about that because I don't like going all over the city. But it made it easy to connect and also to consider them as our neighbors, and it gave us a bit more of a chance to be involved as well. And then subsequently, a foundation in Abbotsford has provided another home that can be used, Jenny didn't mention it, as for just the housing part of what Inner Hope does. And that was really exciting to me because I had always wanted my own home. And then when I was part of Inner Hope, I wanted to see that they would have a home that was more permanent, that they wouldn't have to worry about renewing a lease every year. And although they don't actually own this home, I think it's just so exciting to see how God provided that. And lastly, and probably should have been firstly, I've seen God at work in changed lives. I mean, Jenny mentioned about having more kids go to jail than graduate from high school, and I don't know if that proportion has actually changed yet. But we have seen kids graduate from high school, go to university, graduate from university even, and that's really exciting. And also we've seen some of the youth, you know, they've grown and they've now served in other Christian organizations or are serving in other organizations. And so they're not only being served, but they're becoming servers. And I think that's also really exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I kind of got carried away and went into my thoughts about this when I was talking before. But I do want to echo what Carrie is saying about the changed lives, that to see people go from, like, get their first taste of what it's like to live in peace and to just be so drawn to that and to see them attracted to the Lord and to the peace that he provides instead of being attracted to the world and the chaos it offers.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Beth. So as you can see, there's a huge 19th Avenue, even a little bit of Ruth Morton, New Beginnings piece to this story here. And it's really, it's a story that many people are a part of. I have a picture there with John and Carrie of a group of us at 19th Ave. John and Carrie, for a number of years, joined our Inner Hope family Christmas gathering and just really got to be a part of our lives. So, and there's Darius at one of his first Christmas pageants. So that was, I think for about 2 or 3 years in a row, he had the opportunity to be able to be in the Christmas play. And those experiences, you know, his dad and his grandfather would come along, and those experiences just mean so much. So if you could just keep Dez and Daz and Darius in prayer. Her brother passed away a month ago, tragically. And Darius has actually lost two uncles this year. So his dad's brother and his mom's brother both died at 28 and 29 years old. As we began to have more young people staying in our home, we realized that life skills was a huge gap. We would have young people moving in usually at 16, 17, 18, 19 years old. And young people who still didn't have a bank account, who had never had their first job, who were often in alternate school programs and didn't have the academic skills or study skills to succeed. And so there were these gaps, and we felt like we were doing, like, just putting Band-Aids on. You'd help a kid do their resume, but you didn't have time to coach them and go around with them to hand it out. Or you'd help with one piece and didn't have time with the next piece. And we realized that we needed to multiply the impact on these young people's lives. And in fact, Mark Eng did a research study when he was at Simon Fraser. And he looked at our First Nations people who have graduated from high school. And he looked at the level of support that they had to make it through. And he surveyed 20 Indigenous high school graduates, of which 14 had spent time in alternate programs. But they still completed. And out of these 20, 14 of them also had 6 or more people supporting them through that time. It could have been family, a school counselor, a teacher, a youth worker, a counselor, an elder, a school support worker. So most of them had a team of 6 or more people, or a support network of 6 or more people. And that really has challenged me, that our young people need, every one of them needs 6. And so my goal right now, it's really challenged me that we, rather than just try to reach more, we need to go deeper with those that we are currently supporting. But Boundless was a way to begin to do that. And what the idea was, World Vision came alongside us to provide funding. And the program is based on matching all of the youth one-on-one with a mentor outside of the staff at Inner Hope. And so that person would be their champion and connect with them, hopefully like about once a week, a couple hours, and really get to know them, and then also be able to practically support them. And we would help the youth set goals, practical goals, and that could guide some of the time together. And hopefully by having another role model, by having somebody with a little bit of time to work with them on supporting them on skill development, that we could also see some growth in these young lives. So this program continues today, and it has about 20 teens, 15 to 19-year-olds in the program. That's a monthly workshop, actually. So once a month, we do a group workshop, and we do increased skill development at those workshops. Could be a workshop on conflict resolution, on study skills, on all sorts of cooking, budgeting. Our discipleship area has also grown, and it's changed a little bit. We're working with more children now in that area, too. So part of the reason I am no longer at Mountain View is that a number of our youth started attending a church plant called Reality. And we had had a few young people attend 19th with us, but all of a sudden just the floodgates kind of opened up, and for some reason they just were, we had had a part-time staff at Reality. My brother was interning there, and people were inviting some of our kids along, and pretty soon we had 10, 15 young people going to church there. And it got to a point where I was dropping off a carload of kids over there and then coming to church, and it just got too complicated. But it's a place, they've really been connected there. And so now we see an average of usually 15 to 20 youth and children, sometimes even some of the parents, adults coming as well, even as high as 30, over 30 in a Sunday morning service. And this has been something that, again, wasn't led by me. The kids continue to lead, and we're following and trying to come alongside and be where we see God at work. So we started having lunches after church as a way to build community and build time with our young people. And then our past residents started asking if their children could be sent to Sunday school. So now our biggest contingent is elementary school children. So Larissa's kids and Desiree's kids, and their children are being picked up for church. One of the boys one day, they start pick up at about 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning, pick them up, bring them to the 11 o'clock service. After church, go back, have lunch at the home, and then do a day of, the youth usually play board games or just visit while the kids go to the park. And then at about 4 or 4:30, we start driving them home. One of the boys last year one day said, at about 4:30 when they're trying to load the van up, "Why does church have to end so early?" And he'd been like picked up at like 10 in the morning, and this is after like 4 o'clock. But they just have loved being a part of it. And so now we need Sunday teams to actually come over, and some of them come from other churches. Some teams cook. We have a church down Fraser Street that's committed to cooking once a month for 20 to 30 people. And at about 1 o'clock, everybody comes in, and sometimes there's a volunteer or two already there. And we eat, we try to talk about what they've learned in the service or in Sunday school over the meal, and spend some quality time with them. We also continue to send young people to Camp Quanos for summer camp, and we have a partnership with North American Indigenous Ministries with a First Nations Christian weekend retreat that happens in the fall that a lot of our high schoolers really find helpful to unpack the gospel in the context of their culture. 2014, the year of God's provision. So we, as many of you know, 2013 started to bring some big changes. Carla Dickinson, who had been co-founder of Inner Hope, decided that she had always had a heart for the little ones. When we'd have young moms live with us, she was always packing the little ones. And she felt called to be a foster parent for young children. So she began training with Vancouver Aboriginal Child and Family Services, and then in the summer of 2014 found her own home. With these changes coming up, we knew we would need to hire staff to fill that role, and I also could no longer be house parent and executive director of a growing organization and all of the things that it entailed. So 2014 was kind of a big year for us. But like Carrie mentioned, a foundation stepped forward and offered to purchase a second home for us so that we could have a more private home at one location and have our original location as kind of the hub for our community programs, life skills, and discipleship, and office space on the upstairs. And we've been renting out the downstairs there. This was an exciting time. We made the purchase happen. The foundation let us choose the home and choose the neighborhood. And it was really an amazing process. So this is the front of our second home. So by fall, we had our staff team had grown. Ben and Deirdre in the middle are our new house parents at that home. And it's amazing to have a couple whose only responsibility is just the kids living in the home. So Deirdre is a full-time stay-at-home mom, and Ben's at UBC studying engineering and coming home to chaos. Well, they're just an amazing couple. They've dedicated their lives. They've sacrificed a lot. And we're seeing so much growth and change in the kids living in the home because of their commitment. Kirsten on the far right has taken over as director of programs. So Carla is now down to just 6 hours a week, doing a little bit of human resources and a little bit of support for the organization and sharing her insights. We have a growing team now. So there's Toni. Some of you remember her from church. Toni is finishing her fourth year of Bible college at Briarcrest, majoring in Christian ministries. This summer, she served with Youth with a Mission in Mexico for the summer, hosting mission teams that come in to build houses and do ministry down there. It's amazing to see the transformation. Toni lived with us for 5 years out of the home, home-based with us, starting in high school in her grade 11 and 12th year. Another face that you'll recognize would be Mark on the far right. He's now married with his first child. Mark and Marissa met at Trinity Western University. And last year when they were on maternity leave, Marissa's a teacher, and they both were working on a reserve in central BC called Redstone, a Chilcotin community. And they came back last year for the year on maternity leave, and Mark and Marissa were the respite at our new home and giving Ben and Deirdre breaks a couple evenings a week, a weekend a month, and sometimes for a week for holiday time. Amazing to have one of our own youth grow up and give back and be in a place where the kids sometimes didn't even know that he was from the same life circumstances that they were. Tragically, his old roommate just passed away a few weeks ago of a drug overdose, fentanyl, as you've seen on the news. And it's amazing when I think back to grade 12 and those two boys living together. And, you know, the path that Mark's on now, and I'm just very grateful. I also was with Gage in May for his 25th birthday. We went to YWAM's 25th anniversary house build in Mexico and built a house together. So he's living up in Prince Rupert and came down with his girlfriend to be part of building a home and introducing her to YWAM and getting to know us better. So as we look forward, we know that God has a lot of opportunities ahead for us, and we also know there's still a lot of pain. In the last 10 months, we've had 6 young men that have been connected to the Inner Hope community die tragically between ages 28 and 31. And I really, am praying hard that their children and the next generation are going to turn to Christ and be receive the healing they need. And so our mission is still an urgent need here in the city. High school graduation rates have increased to 43% of Indigenous young people graduating, which is still half of the rest of the population that's at 86%. But we're seeing changes on all levels, and we would ask for your continued prayer. The verse that's challenging me as we look on to the coming year is, but I'm focusing all my energies on this one thing, forgetting the past and looking forward to what lies ahead. I strain to reach the end of the race and receive the prize for which God, through Christ Jesus, is calling us up to heaven. And I am certain that God is at work in lives, even when I can't see it. And I'm certain that the kingdom is going to look differently because of the young people and the families that are being impacted, that are opening their hearts to allow God to work in their lives. But we can't go it alone. So I'm also hoping that we can continue this year to journey together. And I would love to, for those of you who haven't been introduced to the InterHope community yet but might be interested in connecting with us, we would love to have you involved as well. So we need four mentors right now. We have four teenagers that have signed up, that two girls and two boys that right now don't have somebody to be matched one-on-one with as a mentor. And we also on Sunday afternoons are looking for people, both cooks for the meals and also people to spend time with youth and children on Sunday afternoons. And one last way to connect with us and be a support is an October 3rd event. I'm calling this year the miracle year. Yet last year we found the home and the staff, and this year we need to fund it. So October 3rd, there's Ride for Refuge is an event that happens where over 200 charities together raise funds to meet needs of the vulnerable in our country through biking or walking. You can actually walk this year. So, if you're interested, I do have some invitations at the back, or if you're interested in getting our newsletter or becoming a volunteer in any way, just write your name at the back and maybe note what it is that you're interested in supporting. I forgot the Ride for Refuge sign-in, so just mark Ride for Refuge there. But there's little postcards with information on how you can connect. You can sign up. There's a website. We're signing teams up. We have team captains for the 50K ride if you're a keener. And I'm going to head a walk team because I'm not a keener in that department. We also need captains for the 10K and the 25K. If you think you could ride 10K or 25K and would love to, like, or if you'd like to just rally a Mountain View team together, that would just be such an encouragement to us. Or maybe you just want to go on the website and support somebody who's riding. That would be really encouraging as well. I would just like to close in prayer and just also just thank you again so much for all of you that have been there behind the scenes and come alongside us in so many ways. It's been an amazing journey, and I don't forget any of you that have been a part of that. So, God, we are just so thankful today as we reflect on the InterHope story and see the way your people are moved to serve you. God, I thank you for Mountain View and the miracle of the merge of 19th and Ruth Morton coming together and honoring you here as one body. And I pray for their that they would continue to honor you, that they would continue to be a light in this neighborhood and be able to serve and reach their neighbors here, God. And I pray that you would give us wisdom and courage as we journey together to meet needs of the most vulnerable here in our city and country, God. We lift up the precious lives that are close to us, that we've connected with on this journey, God. We especially today lift up Desiree and Mark and Tony, who've lost a sibling and a cousin and a roommate over this last month, God. And I just pray that you continue to heal even in the midst of pain. And we thank you for your presence here. Amen.
Thank you so much for sharing, Jenny. This is really emotional for those of us who have a heart for people in pain, and I'm sure that all of us are. And so we want to take up that challenge and prayerfully consider how we can be part of healing in our city, how we can be part of making changes so that the next generation will not have to go through what some of the past generations have gone through. We give God the glory for everything that he's done in and through you, Jenny, and through InterHope, and this is so wonderful. Let's receive a blessing that God has for Inner Hope and for all of us. May the God of peace, who through the blood of the eternal covenant brought back from the dead our Lord Jesus, that great shepherd of the sheep, equip you with everything good for doing his will. And may he work in us what is pleasing to him through Jesus Christ, to whom be the glory forever and ever. Amen. If anyone would like prayer, we have some people willing to pray up front. And if someone would like to join our prayer team, please let us know as well. That would be a huge blessing. On Tuesday night, we have a church prayer meeting downstairs in the basement. And this church prayer meeting is going to be dedicated to family camp. Family camp is on the weekend. It's a very, very important outreach in Point Roberts. If you haven't signed up yet, Will is still waiting for your scribbly, and we'll accept it, I'm sure, even as late as this afternoon. So please do that. And I encourage many of you to come on Tuesday so that we would bathe this family camp in prayer. This family camp is maybe not quite the intensity that Inner Hope is, but some of those dynamics are there as well. There's broken people, broken families, people that need Jesus, and people that need us to share that word. Thanks so much for joining us. God bless.